The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. It's Wednesday. And, you know, it is the week leading up to Labor Day. So many people are on vacation. Not me. Not only am I here doing my show. Yes, we're live at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific at NicoleSandler.com. And, of course, rebroadcast on the Progressive Voices Network at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. And then heard via podcast, you know, whenever you want. Because that's how it works. But I'm also filling in for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen this week on the broadcast, so they can take off for the holiday. So I'll be in for them again today and again tomorrow. So keeping busy here. And in the midst of all this, we've got a hurricane bearing down. If you're watching on YouTube, I can show you the cone of uncertainty, as they call it. Here, I'm putting it up on the screen as we speak. For those of you not watching on YouTube, let me explain. It basically shows at 2 o'clock this afternoon, tropical storm Dorian will hit Puerto Rico. I know it pains me just to say the words. The only good point, the only positive I can give you is that rather than a hurricane and hurricane force winds hitting Puerto Rico, these are tropical storm winds. It's still going to be nasty. It's going to be wet. It's going to be ugly. But at least they're not being hit with Category 4 or 5 winds. Either way, it doesn't look good. Now, as for what it looks like for me, just because I'm selfish and, you know, it's all about me, me, me. The map has it making landfall on Florida's East Coast Monday morning at around 8 a.m. But thankfully, for me, again, speaking selfishly, it's way up the coast. We are on the lower end of the cone of uncertainty. We're still in there. We're still going to get winds and a lot of rain. And I'm sure lots of nasty weather over the weekend. But, you know, I don't think we're going to get the brunt of it, which, you know, is good for us. Not so much for the West Coast. The East Coast above us. All right. We got a really, really busy show for you today. And it's going to be kind of Florida-centric. Not by design. It just sort of shook out that way. Any minute now, the phone is going to ring, and it's going to be Steve Geller. And Steve Geller is a former member of the Florida House and the Florida Senate, never got past the Florida Senate. These days, he is a county commissioner of my county, and he's the chairman of a new organization here in Florida of former and current elected officials who think that it's their responsibility to tell we, the poor, uneducated masses, how we should vote. They formed this group called the Real Solutions Caucus, and there was a story about them in the local paper, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, the other day, and the headline basically said, "Anybody but Warren and Sanders." So I invited Steve Geller on the show. We're going to have a little conversation. Before we get to him, he's going to be calling any minute. Since we didn't get to it yesterday, let's, you know, get a bit of comedy in because we do need some laughs. So it's been a couple of weeks since we heard from Lauren Mayer. We wait no further. Here she is, Lauren Mayer, the queen of parody comedy songs. Take it away, Lauren.
Trump's upset and he's getting bitter in yet another tantrum on Twitter over his latest international fail. Air Force One is once again dark since he picked a fight with Denmark, 'cause unlike Trump, Greenland's not for sale. He inflates his crowd size tallies while fat shaming folks at his rallies, saying crazy things he'll then deny. But despite the nonsense he repeats, we heard what he said and saw those empty seats, 'cause unlike Trump, film footage doesn't lie. Background checks, he says, will fix it until the NRA makes him nix it. Then he's back to mental illness. What a jerk. Won't let us see a single tax return, but wants to boost what the wealthiest earn. Well, just like Trump, trickle-down economics doesn't work. To the press, he's sure not shy about claiming he's the Messiah. Seriously, can you believe this, putz? It seems his enablers ought to bench a guy who's got allergies or dementia. Well, unlike Trump, peanuts aren't really nuts. And unlike Trump, socialism isn't disgusting or scary. And unlike Trump's hair, climate change is real. And unlike Trump, journalism is good for democracy. And unlike Trump, treating our allies with respect makes sense. And unlike Trump, the Prime Minister of Denmark isn't nasty. And unlike Trump, Greenland's not for sale. Hmm. And unlike Trump, this song's not a total joke.
Ah. Lauren Mayer, knocking it out of the ballpark again. Unlike Trump, Greenland's not for sale. You can find Lauren's comedy on YouTube or, you know, Facebook, all the other usual sources. So, my phone hasn't rung yet. All right, so Steve Geller is supposed to be calling me. Let me just give you a little more background on what this is about. Oh, and is he calling on the wrong number? I think he's calling on the wrong number. Hello? And it didn't work. Oh, no. All right. I'm going to call you because I'm live on the air. I'll call you on this number. I'll call you in a moment. Thanks. Bye. I guess I'm having phone problems. What else is new? So that was my guest. So let's call him on the number that he just called me from. Live radio. Isn't it fun? And working without a producer is even more fun. Okay. Okay, so calling Steve Geller. Here we go. And now, so Steve Geller, he should be answering.
This Senator Geller, can I help you?
There you go. Hey, Steve Geller, it's Nicole Sandler calling. Sorry about the confusion. I work on out of a studio put together with chewing gum and spit. So you know, stuff like that happen every now and then.
Well, I'm always pleased to speak with you, despite any problems we've had.
Well, thank you.
And connecting.
It's been a number of years since we spoke, but back. Well, let's see. I was fired from WINZ, South Florida's last progressive talk station in 2008. It was the Friday before the Democratic convention was to open, and I had just finished up my morning show and was telling the listeners of how we were going to cover the convention beginning Monday, and I got called into the boss's office and fired because Clear Channel, now known as iHeartMedia, was preparing to flip the station from progressive talk to be, I believe, the fourth sports talk station in South Florida, denying us of a...
We definitely need more of those.
Yes, we do. No, we need more progressive talk stations. There hasn't been a radio, a political or a news talk station that aims at Democrats in this town since 2008. So we're at 11 years now. So back then, you know, you were in the state Senate, the Florida State Senate. We would talk from time to time. Didn't necessarily always agree on everything. And I'm afraid we're at one of those points right now.
That's not how I recall.
Well, okay. Well, let's put, you know, put the past behind us because we're in a new situation here. It's 2019. Right. 19. Right. We have a madman in the White House. The world is going nuts. We need to change things in a big way. And I saw an article in the South Florida Sun Sentinel last week. The headline said something to the effect of anybody but Warren or Sanders. And
I would say I didn't write the headline.
Okay. The headline here, that no Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, we need a moderate South Florida Democrats tell their party. And that's the headline of the story that opens with a group of prominent current and former elected officials in Broward County is warning the Democratic Party that defeating President Donald Trump requires nominating a candidate who can appeal to a broad swath of the electorate, not one of the progressives running far to the left. Now, were those your words, or was that Anthony Mann of the Sun Sentinel, who's, you know, never been a friend to my side of the aisle?
Well, that's Tony's characterization of it. But why don't I tell you what we're doing, and you may draw whatever conclusions you wish.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, Real Solutions is 26 current and former elected officials. 22 of us are current, 4 are former. And I think that we can agree, you and I can agree on the issue. And let me read you one paragraph from our statement of principles.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that a current president is an existential threat to our country.
Agree.
And that we must do everything we can to prevent his reelection.
Yep.
We object to his constant lying, his divisiveness, his cozy relations with Russia and other totalitarian countries, while fighting with our historic allies. We believe that Democrats running for president should focus their criticism on the current administration and not President Obama. We added that after one of the debates. Now, let me read you another paragraph from there, which is, we are all, and this is the only line that is underlined in the entire statement of principles. We are all current or former elected Democrats in Broward County, Florida, the largest Democratic margin county in the swing states. And this is where the underlining starts. We will support the nominee of the Democratic Party.
As you should.
So
as you
we
should.
Are all,
right.
Well, I've spoken with some of the groups that might be more philosophically inclined with you that didn't vote for Hillary after the last election.
Okay, but hold on.
Wait, what? Yeah, sure.
Just by means of facts, more Bernie Sanders supporters voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 than Hillary Clinton supporters voted for Barack Obama in 2008. That's a fact. That's a fact that the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. Well, I can confirm it. I've done my research. I can confirm it. Over and over again,
one of the things I always liked about you, Nicole, was you always had well-researched opinions as opposed to others. But I can speak only for myself and some of the groups that I've spoken to, which is I have told every group that I will support the nominee of the Democratic Party. And I ask everyone, all of the Democratic groups that I've spoken to commit to the same thing.
Okay.
And I think that you and I agree on the principle here. The principle here is that we need to prevent Donald Trump's reelection because he is an existential threat to this country.
Hey, Steve, absolutely.
Now the question is a tactical question of what is the best way of defeating him.
So exactly.
Let's just agree that we agree on the goal.
We agree on the goal. Now, I've read all the stuff you sent me, and I underlined a few things, too. You said, we also support the democratic movement in Venezuela, organized labor, common sense gun control, available and affordable access to health care while maintaining consumer choice. Are you saying we have consumer choice under the Affordable Care Act right now?
I'm saying we have more than we would under Medicare for All. This was a code of Nicole. Hold on. This is kind of a code of saying that we are not supportive of the Medicare for All And
you're not, again, obviously.
Go ahead, your turn.
You're not supportive of Medicare for All. That's obvious.
That's correct.
Now, you work at a law firm. I'm guessing you have insurance through your employer.
Yeah, I'm actually a sole practitioner,
okay.
But you know, go ahead.
But you have insurance through your place of business. I only have insurance because of the Affordable Care Act.
I support the Affordable Care Act.
Well, but I don't as it currently stands. Okay. It has been every year the premiums have gone up exorbitantly. The
actually,
choices
they're not going up in Florida
okay, but
this
but
year,
it doesn't
please,
matter.
Please.
We have two choices in Florida, one of which is no good. So we're left with the choice of Florida Blue and taking their what they offer, or you're out of luck. Now, I'd be dead
many
right
the,
now.
Hold many on, of hold, the people can I finish? Are advocates of a public
can I,
option.
Can I finish? Can I
which
finish,
I
please?
Think is a great idea.
Can I finish, please?
Of course.
Right. Here's my problem, and we could go into the details on this. My daughter, my healthy 20-year-old daughter, is priced out of right. the market. My healthy 20-year-old daughter, through Obamacare, can't afford a basic health care policy. So she's uninsured.
Okay.
Now you said another thing. This election will be decided in a handful of swing states, each with significant groups of swing voters. We want a nominee who can appeal to those voters while at the same time motivating our base voters to turn out in record numbers. The Real Solutions Caucus will encourage Democratic presidential candidates to take policy positions that will appeal to general election voters. We will encourage voters to support candidates that have the best chance of winning in the swing states. Who are you to say
you
who has the best chance?
You have accurately read our position.
Yes, I know how to read. Who are you to say who's going to best appeal to these swing voters? The majority, the biggest portion of American people in the 2016 election were those who didn't vote. I'm sorry, you know what? I'm a little wrong. 55% of voting age citizens cast ballots in 2016. That means 45% did not. Those are the people who we need to win over. Those are the people who stayed home because they didn't want to vote for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. I'm overgeneralizing here. But why would you say, you know, you want to go for the centrist person? I believe if you go for the centrist or conservadem, as I put it, you're going to alienate all those masses of young people who are coming out in force, taking an interest in electoral politics, taking an interest in the future of this nation, who are, you know, coming out in 15,000 people showed up for Elizabeth Warren the other night. You always have numbers like that for Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden pulls in dozens. I mean, I don't understand why you're pushing.
Just let me know when it's my turn.
I will. I don't understand why you're pushing for the milquetoast centrist candidate who's going to alienate all the activists that are finally getting involved now because they want to see a change in the way this country is run. Now it's your turn.
Thank you. Do you have a right to your opinion?
I do.
I have a right to mine.
You do.
I am not. There's nothing in here. I saw people complaining about, oh, well, they're acting as gatekeepers. Mm. We are elected officials based on our experience. We have made a judgment. I'm not telling you that your position is wrong. I'm telling you what my position is. I am basing my opinion on being a current elected official, having been an elected official for on and off for over 30 years, we have other currently elected officials, and we have, based on our experience, reached a conclusion. I'm
right.
not saying that your conclusion is wrong. I'm saying we share the same goal, but have reached a different conclusion.
Okay.
In every election, let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
In every election, Democrat versus Republican, there is always the question, do we need to appeal more to the base voters?
Who is the base?
Who
makes up the base? I think you're generalizing here. You're assuming who the base is, and I think you're wrong. We have a new base who's just...
I respect your opinion to think I'm wrong, but now can you let me finish?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Every election, whether it was Gillum Graham, whether it's
I'm guessing you were for
Hillary,
Graham.
Obama,
right? You were for Hillary.
Trump. every mm-hmm. 2 years, mm-hmm. we have a question of, is it better to try and energize the base voters, which in the Democratic Party means appealing more to the left, or is it better to try and get swing voters that in this particular election would be suburban women,
and the 45% of the country that did not vote. You think we need to go after the Trump voters? I think we need to go after the disaffected. You've been speaking, you filibuster. Let me ask you this. Did you believe that Kerry was more electable over Howard Dean? I'm guessing, right?
I'm sorry?
I'm guessing that you supported John Kerry over Howard Dean, thought he was more electable. You probably supported.
I honestly don't recall what I did in that election.
Okay.
That was like some time ago.
Hillary
I know
Clinton
I
over Barack Obama
actively supported the Democratic nominee. I just don't recall what I did in the primary. But what you're saying is probably
right.
Generally accurate.
You probably supported Hillary Clinton over Barack Obama, thinking she was more electable. You probably supported Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders, thinking she was more electable. The fact is that you're still telling us who is more electable. And now I'm guessing you support Joe Biden.
And the opinion of 25 other current and former, almost all of us current elected officials.
Right. Local county commissioners and such, right?
This particular mm-hmm. election, yeah. Donald Trump is energizing the base. And we
need
to try and pick off those other voters.
Right. And we do by coming up with a nominee who excites people. I'm guessing, again, just from what I know of you, I'm guessing you're a Joe Biden supporter. Are you?
I have not endorsed anybody. I can tell you that in the group, although we have not endorsed anybody, mm-hmm. we're just saying we want someone that we think can appeal to the swing voters. I would say the top candidates would probably be Biden, Mayor Pete, and Kamala would probably be the top three.
God. And see, therein lies the problem. I'm all in favor of letting the electorate decide. I think the party should stay out
That's
of primaries. Well,
we are not the party. We are 26 current elected officials who have the same constitutional right to share our opinion and let people know our opinion that you do. We are not saying you must do what we say. We're not putting anybody on the ballot. We're not taking anybody off
Thank
the
God.
Ballot. We are 26 separate and discreet elected officials who are offering our opinion. No different than you're offering your opinion.
Okay. Well,
and I'm not telling you that you're wrong.
Okay. I'm telling you that you're
you
wrong.
You have an opinion.
Mark my words. This is my prediction, and then we can end it. I believe if the Democrats once again force an establishment creature down our throats.
How are we forcing
the same
anything?
Way, the same way you forced Hillary Clinton last time, because the Democratic Party couldn't keep its hand off the scale and they skewed things
How
in her favor.
How are we putting our finger on the scale? We are a voluntary group that has no power. We have nothing.
Thank God.
We're offering our opinions.
Right.
We
and I'm offering my opinion
to do
and telling
with who
you.
Gets on the ballot.
Okay. I'm very, very glad about that, because I'm telling you, you're wrong. The same people who didn't understand
Nicole,
that enthusiasm.
I think,
Thank
Nicole,
you. Thank
I
you,
Steve. I believe that you do your research.
Mm-hmm.
I respect your opinions. I think it are well thought out.
Uh-huh.
They are different than mine.
Obviously.
I'm not saying you are wrong. I hope you're not saying I'm wrong.
I am.
You have one theory. I have a different theory.
Okay. We'll just agree
Both
to disagree.
Both of us agree we need to get rid of this madman who's our president.
Yes, we do.
Both of us agree that we will support the Democratic nominee. It is a difference of opinion as to which tactic is better to do that. I'm not saying you're wrong. Please don't tell me I'm wrong. Well, these are different opinions.
Okay.
We're both entitled to our opinions.
That we are. But I see these articles in the newspaper. All these elected officials, I just want to make it clear that you stating your opinion, you might be a commissioner in the county in which I reside, but you have no right to come out and say, we need to vote for a centrist. You have nothing to back you up on that. A centrist,
Nicole,
I believe.
Do you have the right to say, Nicole, do you have the right to say that you think we need to nominate Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren?
I do.
You
Absolutely.
Do, and I have the right to express my opinion.
All right.
And
well, we heard your opinion.
25
Steve?
Other elected yep. officials have the same opinion. We have no more power than you and no less power
right.
than
well,
you.
Right. Well, I'm glad
we are
of one thing.
Expressing our opinions.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Why does that upset you?
Because you're coming at it from you're in a position of authority and you're telling those uninformed voters that they need
I'm
to elect a
opinion.
Milquetoast centrist blue dog New Dem in order to win over disaffected voters. And I'm here to tell you, if that's who we nominate, we wind up with 4 more years of Donald Trump. That's what I know.
Both of us agree that would be a bad thing.
That would be a bad thing. All right. Steve Geller, I'm glad you gave us...
on the goal. We just
Absolutely.
Have disagreements yeah. on tactics.
Okay. At least I've got a list of all the people who are in your group, so I know to vote against all of them because I fundamentally disagree with your view of who is a Democrat. And the direction the Democratic Party needs to move in order to, move the country on the road we need to go. So we agree. We do. We agree to disagree.
I think that's a mistake on your part,
okay.
but we all have the right to our opinion.
Yeah, we do.
You
okay.
have the
Thank
right
you,
to have
Steve.
Yours. I have the right to have mine. We disagree
we do.
On tactics.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you. All right.
All right
you take
thanks.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, God. I remembered he talks. He loves to talk. Bottom line is, I will fight these people, and I will publish the list of these 26 current and former elected officials who are all like on the county commissioner level. I mistakenly, when I read the story the other day, I really thought Debbie Wasserman Schultz was part of this crew. I mean, she probably is in, attitude, but she didn't sign on to them, making me believe that she's even smarter than this crap. The article rubbed me the wrong way. The group, which is calling itself the Real Solutions Caucus, said that defeating Trump is the overriding goal for 2020. It sees 10 candidates, including former Vice President Joe Biden, as best equipped to appeal to swing voters in a handful of states that will decide the election. Yeah, I think not. In fact, I think it is just the opposite. If Joe Biden is the nominee, we get 4 more years of Donald Trump.
Go to Joe 30330. Joe. 30330.
Joe.
Go to Joe 30330.
Okay, you know what? I would let that play out, but I do have one other thing to share with you, and it's an ad that the Biden campaign released yesterday. I just want to make sure I'm going to have enough time for Ted Deutch. Okay, so the Biden ad released a 60-second commercial yesterday on healthcare. I'm going to play it for you, but watch out, because if you're like me, your head is going to explode. All right, you ready for this? Talk about using your child's death as a political pawn. Check this out.
I was sworn into the United States Senate next to a hospital bed. My wife and daughter had been killed in a car crash.
Seriously?
Lying in that bed were my two surviving little boys. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like if we didn't have the health care they needed immediately. 40 years later, one of those little boys, my son Beau, was diagnosed with terminal cancer and given only months to live. I can't fathom what would have happened if the insurance companies had said for the last 6 months of his life, you're on your own. The fact of the matter is, health care is personal to me. Obamacare is personal to me. When I see the president try to tear it down and others propose to replace it and start over,
what?
That's personal to me, too. We got to build on what we did because every American deserves affordable health care. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Oh, my God. That is disgusting. He's using his family's personal tragedy to try to, what, get your pity vote? Healthcare is personal to me, too. I fought lung cancer. Hello? We all, guess what? We die! Two things are certain in this life. You pay taxes, you die. Chances are you're going to need healthcare at some point in your life. And sorry, Obamacare was set up to fail because they built it that way. God, that's sickening. I'm sorry. That is just sickening. Reprehensible. Indefensible. I could go on and on, but I won't. All right. I told you we have a busy show for you today. My congressman, I told you we're Florida-centric, too. I'm a pest when it comes to my congressman. I told you this. You know, he's been representing my district for a long time before he went to Congress to take over for the former representative for this district, Robert Wexler, who left to go work at a think tank. Ted Deutsch was a state assembly person. And as such, you know, I did a local radio show. I had his cell phone, which is remains the same today. I've used it twice. I called him once the day coming up on 3 years that we were coming home from the hospital after I had my left lung removed because of lung cancer. And at the hospital, they gave me a prescription for OxyContin, go figure, or oxycodone, to be more specific, because I had pain. It was pain medication. The problem is it was impossible to fill the prescription. We went to one pharmacy, the first pharmacy, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have enough to fill the prescription. I said, well, can you partially fill it and we'll get the rest tomorrow? She said, no, if we partially fill it, the rest of the prescription goes away. You can't come back for the rest of it. I said, well, can you call another Walgreens pharmacy and make sure they have it? No, we're not allowed to do that. And I said, excuse me, we're just heading home from the hospital where I had major surgery that removed my left lung because of lung cancer, and you're telling me you can't help me get this prescription filled? No. We drove to three different pharmacies. We got lucky because on the third try, they actually had enough to fill the prescription. But really, this is what we're doing to legitimately sick people who need this medication because there are junkies out there? I'm sorry, that's pretty fucked up in my book. So I called Ted Deutsch and I ranted. I got his voicemail, but I left him the longest message. And of course, nothing was ever done about it. I called him a second time on his cell phone, and that was just a few weeks ago when he was hedging and wouldn't come out and say and call for an impeachment inquiry. Well, thankfully, he did step up to do the right thing. I was inviting Ted Deutsch on the show a lot during the time before he called for an impeachment inquiry. It wasn't until after he did that his office all of a sudden got back to me and said, "Well, we can do something over the break." So, with no further ado, my congressman, Ted Deutsch.
Okay, that's fine.
All right. Joining me on the line right now is my congressman, Ted Deutsch. He represents Florida's 22nd district in Congress. Hello, Congressman. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. It's, as you know, it's challenging times in our country. Things are weird, to put it bluntly. There are a bunch of questions I want to ask you about, you know, what's happening. Congress, of course, on recess, going back next week, not a moment too soon. I guess I should start off by apologizing for being one of your PETA constituents. Pain in the ass.
That's not the PETA that I'm used to dealing with.
Different.
So I don't
think
you have anything to apologize for.
Good. Okay. Because I'm sorry, but not sorry. Because I think it's my responsibility as an informed constituent to lobby my congressman on issues that are important to me. And so saying that, I've obviously called your office and I've posted on Twitter and I've emailed you and I've even texted you on occasion because I happen to have your cell phone number from the days when you were in the state assembly. I hope I don't take advantage of it too often. But occasionally I need to make a point. And most recently, I know I was on your case a lot about the impeachment issue, which you finally came around to. In fact, you wrote an op-ed in the Sun Sentinel, the South Florida newspaper, that basically made you the House Democrat to put the number over half, now saying they're in favor of an impeachment inquiry. Do I have that right?
Yes, that is. It's definitely the way it was reported, but we're more than half at this point for sure.
But Nancy Pelosi is still not there. What's holding her back?
I know that the speaker's goal here is to make sure that everyone understands what those of us who have read the Mueller report and watch the hearing with Mueller now clearly understand, which is the administration, the President Trump, on multiple occasions, certainly the five that we focused on in the hearing, but even more than that, but in these five instances, clearly took action that, if he were not the president of the United States, would have resulted in some charges being brought for obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he is the president of the United States means that we need to look to the Mueller report. The Mueller report says that Congress needs to hold the president accountable, and that's what we're trying to do. I believe that we don't need, and I think this is part of the confusion when people talk about the speaker's view, I don't believe that we need to have a big debate on the House floor about whether or not to launch an impeachment inquiry, because the Judiciary Committee already has the power to move forward with articles of impeachment if that's the next step. We've already been conducting these hearings, and we're now in court trying to get our hands on the grand jury testimony, mm-hmm. trying to get McGahn to come testify. And when the court sides with us, as I'm confident that they will, we're going to wind up going full speed ahead with this investigation. And I think the speaker at that point will be even more encouraging of our doing our job, getting the information out there so that we can proceed to hold the president accountable.
Well, I hope so. Now, I notice Congress was supposed to return from the August break on September 9th. I know that the Judiciary Committee has a hearing set for the 4th. That's next Wednesday. So is it just your committee that's coming back early? It's 5 days early. I wonder why you guys didn't come back. In fact, after the latest round of shootings, to do something about it. I know Nancy Pelosi was very vocal saying that the Senate should come back to deal with gun issues, but the House already passed a background check bill. And so she said that the House has already done its job. Now the Senate needs to come back and do its part. Do you think the House is done yet with gun legislation?
No. There was some, I'm not sure the speaker said exactly like that, but I know there were some people who did say that the House did what we're supposed to, and now it's up to the Senate. And it's true, the universal background checks is a really important step forward. It would absolutely help save lives. And the House passed it, and it sits on McConnell's desk. But we're by no means finished. That's why we're going back. The Judiciary Committee is going back a week early.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take up and send to the full House floor for a vote a national red flags bill to give law enforcement the ability to get guns away from people who pose a threat to themselves or others, and to take up my legislation to outlaw high capacity magazines.
Please,
because nobody needs to fire at more than 10 rounds at a time. This is the next step. Yeah, I agree with you. I think we should have done this in the days after El Paso and Dayton.
Yep.
But I'm glad we're going back to do this before the full House gets back. And I'm also glad that we announced, and I don't think this got a lot of attention, but in the third week in September, the Judiciary Committee is going to hold a hearing on an assault weapons ban, getting weapons of war off our streets. And that's going to be a historic opportunity for us as well.
Awesome. Now, again, Congressman Ted Deutsch is with us. He's my congressman here in Florida's 22nd district. As you know, Ted, I am based in Coral Springs, Florida, right in the middle of the district. We are right next door to Parkland. In fact, Parkland is basically our sister city. Everything is Coral Springs, Parkland. And Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is one of four that serve our community. I remember the day, that February 14th, so clearly because I was on the air and I noticed somebody in one of the chat rooms that goes during the show saying there's an active shooter at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and just my stomach dropped because obviously that's here. It's horrific no matter where it happens, but as you know, sir, when it's in your community, it's that extra punch to the gut. You've really stepped up on the issue of doing something about guns since Parkland. Was this a big issue for you beforehand, or did it break something inside of you, or both?
It was a big issue. I mean, it's been a big issue for me since I got to Congress. And in fact, my every time anyone asked what my greatest frustration was about being in Congress, which people like to ask from time to time, my answer always was the inability for Congress to take any action at all after Sandy Hook, after 26 and 7-year-old kids were gunned down, were slaughtered in their school. And I remember giving speeches on the House floor and elsewhere saying that you shouldn't have to have a mass shooting take place in your district for you to care about gun safety.
Yep.
But man, oh man, when it does, it is, I think the way you put it is exactly right. It's like a punch to the gut. It's so personal, and I've spent so much time this past year and a half in the community with the young people and the movement they started, with the families as they mourned, and so many families who have turned their grief into action and their efforts to bring about change. Seeing what this does to a community is just so painful, and yet you can't help but be inspired by the actions taken by so many in the community afterward, that I feel especially committed. I've redoubled my efforts. I mean, this is now something I think about every day, and what more can we be doing, and how do we elevate the argument, and how do we go after the gun lobby, and how do we do all the things that stand in the way of our passing meaningful reform?
Right. Yeah. The kids, the Parkland kids, the March for Our Lives is the banner of their organization, just introduced a new program, a new plan. I think it's the Peace Plan or something like that. Are you working with them on that?
Yeah, I have a meeting with them next week when I'm back in D.C. Look, the March for Our Lives students have been remarkable. Mm-hmm. In everything they've accomplished already. They were the ones who led the way to help pass gun safety legislation in Florida, something that would have been unheard of before. They traveled around the country and inspired their peers everywhere in America to get involved. And that involvement and all the passion coming out of the March for Our Lives and working with Moms Demand and all the other groups, that helped give us a gun safety majority in Congress. And so there were a whole bunch of people that I served with before who thought that they could simply sit back and ignore this issue and ignore the demands of their community, take their money from the gun lobby, and keep getting reelected.
Right.
And I'm happy to tell you that a lot of them are now former members of Congress, because these kids made this an issue that really counted in the last election.
Absolutely. And obviously, it's only, I think, finally, people, even Republicans who are gun owners, understand the need for some kind of sensible regulation. And we've reached the breaking point here. And Congressman Deutsch, I did want to thank you for your actions on this issue, because I know you've really, really stepped up, and I appreciate it. I wanted to, speaking of South Florida, Obviously, the G7 just wrapped up. And Donald Trump was asked in the press conference at the end of it about next year's gathering, which will be here in the U.S. And Trump went on and on with what amounted to basically a big free commercial for his Doral Golf Club. Can Congress do anything to stop him from holding the 2020 G7 at one of his own properties?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I listened to the president talk about that. He sounded like he's the group sales manager for the Doral Resort.
Yeah.
He didn't sound like the president of the United States. And it's just, it's so crazy on so many levels. First of all, he says that he only cares about, and by the way, the only thing he should care about is his job as commander-in-chief, not his job making money for his family.
Of course.
And yet, time and time again, the evidence points to the contrary. The Doral never should have been included as a list of possible hotels. One, you've got the emoluments issue. He can't get any benefit from foreign governments. And obviously, these rooms would all be taken by foreign governments. But two, though, getting back to your question about Congress, there are procurement laws that exist. And we're just starting to look at it. But it seems pretty clear that those aren't being followed when the president stands up and says, I don't care how many other properties all around the country would work. We're going to do this at Doral. So, yes, that's definitely something you'll see hearings on when we go back.
Good. Thank goodness. Now, I know you sit on the Judiciary Committee. We're going to get back to that in a second. But you're also the chairman of the House Ethics Committee. I would think that ethics would be a big deal with this administration. Does that fall under your auspices?
Yeah, well, the Ethics Committee in the House enforces the rules of the House against House members.
Oh, I see.
That said, yes, I because of the position that I'm in and the work that we do holding members accountable, and we do it on a regular basis, and last Congress, I think, was the perfect example with throughout the Me Too movement, the number of members of Congress who either resigned or didn't run for re-election because of information that came out in investigations that we did. I understand the things that ought to be done to hold someone accountable. And there isn't a committee, there isn't anyone who's doing this against the president. The Office of Government Ethics technically is supposed to be able to. They don't have the necessary authority. They're unable to hold the president accountable in these ethics issues the way that we do in the House. And that's something else that we're working hard to address.
You know, I mentioned you're on the judiciary, and when we started the conversation, I first launched into a question about impeachment because I believe, for the sake of the future of our republic, he needs to be impeached. Now, whether or not he's convicted in the Senate is another question. The fact is, this president has done such horrible things to this country that he's got to be held accountable. And having those hearings live on television every day in an impeachment proceeding will accomplish that. He'll go down in history as a president who has been impeached, whether or not he's removed from office. That said, he breaks every norm, every rule, everything that is considered how things work in this country, telling not only former staffers, but people who never even worked at that White House to ignore congressional subpoenas because he's got absolute immunity or some nonsense like that. I'm worried that Congress is going to be basically made obsolete because he's stripping them or you of your oversight, not only responsibilities and duties, but the chance to do it of that you're not able to perform your constitutionally mandated duties of oversight.
Right. So the president, this president is not going to make Congress obsolete, despite his inclination to try to do it and his wish that he could do it. We do have three co-equal branches of government, and he's not going to succeed at that. What I'm confident will happen is that you're right about the way he's tried to block us from doing our job. And it's not just the obstruction of justice that was laid out in the Mueller report. It's the way he's trying to obstruct Congress from even pursuing what's in the Mueller report that's so hugely problematic. So we're in court. This claim that the administration has made, that the Justice Department has made, that that essentially says, if you ever worked in the White House, if you walked past the White House,
right,
if you thought about the White House at any point in your life, then you can't ever appear before the House Judiciary Committee. That's nonsense. And there is no blanket immunity. That it's not constitutional. I'm confident the court will rule that, will find that. And when they do, then not only do we get Don McGahn, the White House counsel, but that opens it up for us to get Rob Porter and Corey Lewandowski and Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein, all of the people who were there to witness the president's actions. That's when Congress really does its job in holding the president accountable.
When do we expect those rulings, number one? And number two, is there a danger, because we know the way that Trump and Mitch McConnell have been stacking the decks with these very right-wing, very unqualified judges, many of them now put in position for life. Is there any worry that the courts will uphold his insane positions on these things?
Well, I suppose it's always, there's always a worry about what the court can do. I mean, we live in a world where I find that I've spent a huge amount of time trying to get people to pass my Democracy for All amendment to overturn Citizens United and get money out of politics, because that was a decision from the Supreme Court. So yeah, there's always that concern, but my hope is that not too long into fall, we'll get a decision and we'll be able to proceed with these hearings.
Okay. I know we're on a time tight constraint. I just have a million questions for it. I'll finish up with this one. Breaking news. The Federal Election Commission vice chairman announced his resignation. So this means that the agency that enforces and regulates campaign finance laws will, what's being reported, is effectively shut down, something that hasn't happened since 2008, because they won't have the legal minimum of four commissioners to make decisions. As it is, Trump won't admit that Russia meddled, although I hate that word, in the 2016 elections, and doesn't seem to be concerned about doing anything to safeguard the 2020 elections. And now if the FCC is virtually out of business, is there anything safeguarding our elections?
Well, fortunately, I mean, the FEC has other challenges. It hasn't, just because of the way it's set up, it makes it almost impossible for them to do the job the way they need to. And our HR1, our For People legislation that would aim to help fix our democracy would also help change that. But that's not going to happen right now. In the meantime, going into 2020, we have the benefit of the American people, who now understand fully what happened in 2016.
Some do.
Understand the Mueller report is pretty clear. Russia interfered in our election.
Right.
The Trump campaign knew it, welcomed it, was only too happy to have it. So going into 2020, Congress has been pressing all of the appropriate parts of the administration. We've had classified meetings to make sure that they are doing what they need to safeguard our elections. But what's so frustrating at the same time, is we passed legislation to require nationwide, to require a paper trail, audit rights, and enhanced cybersecurity. And again, McConnell won't even take it up. I think that might be where Moscow Mitch comes from. But it's the American people are paying attention. The press is paying attention. And we now, no one's going to be caught by surprise. The local secretaries of state and supervisors of elections are feeling the heat from state and local elected officials, as well as members of Congress. So there's so much attention paid to it. That's how we start to address it. The best way to address this is to register the largest number of voters and for voters to turn out en masse in 2020. That's the surest way that we can take action and make sure that Donald Trump is a one-term president.
Exactly. Congressman Ted Deutsch, I've got a whole other laundry list of questions for you that I guess are just going to have to wait till next time. Thank you so much.
We'll do it next time.
I hope so. I always appreciate your time, and I appreciate the hard work you're putting in. And I appreciate you listening to my bitching and moaning from time to time, too.
I know it comes from a really good place.
It does.
don't worry, and I hope that I hope your listeners will feel free to follow us on Twitter at Rep. Ted Deutsch and Congressman Ted Deutsch on Instagram and Facebook and all the rest, because we try to get information out as quickly and timely as we can.
You got it. Thank you so much, Congressman. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take
sure.
care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. Congressman Ted Deutsch of Florida's 22nd District. We've recorded that a couple of days ago, just in case you were wondering why I didn't make any mention of the fact that we have a hurricane headed our way. Again, the latest update shows Dorian hitting the east coast of Florida Monday morning, but quite a bit north of where I am, just, you know, to make it all about me, because, you know. What else am I going to do? All right, we've got a couple of minutes left. Let me take this moment to remind you that in addition to my show this week, I'm also guest hosting The Bradcast tonight. The Bradcast airs on a number of radio stations around the country and internet stations around the world. It'll be on the Progressive Voices Network at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific tonight, featuring actually a couple of interviews that I did last week on Friday. Brian Karam, the White House correspondent for Playboy magazine, who is currently suspended from the White House for a ridiculous incident that we discussed. And he was on the broadcast with me after that incident happened, so I thought they'd appreciate the follow-up as well. By the way, he was in court today for this lawsuit against the White House. We don't expect a ruling on that, on whether or not he'll get his press pass back before the 30-day suspension is up, until the end of this week or beginning of next week. I'll let you know when that comes down. I'm also running the interview I did Friday with Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone. You know, it's interesting because there's a discussion going on in the YouTube chat room about the group of people on the left who don't believe that Russia hacked our elections. And I'm not even sure that that's what they're saying. And the names that were named in this conversation were Ray McGovern, former CIA agent, Glenn Greenwald, who I take with a grain of salt. Who else? Another person who was invoked in this conversation was Scott Ritter. And it blows my mind that Scott Ritter is all of a sudden emerging again as an authority. Scott Ritter, you may recall, during the Iraq War, was a weapons inspector. He came on the air with me many times during those days because he was very accessible, and he was the one saying Iraq does not have weapons of mass destruction. He had been on the ground inspecting facilities, and he said they do not have weapons of mass destruction. This is all a ruse. Well, back in, I don't know what year it was. Someone had it in the chat room, but I don't. Here it is. In 2001, Scott Ritter was offered. I need to back up a bit. Okay, Scott Ritter was arrested in 2001 and 2009 for attempting to solicit sex from a minor. He was caught in police stings. He was found guilty in 2009 and sentenced to 1.5 to 5.5 years. He was paroled in 2014. And then think it through in the YouTube chat room, did the research here. So thank you. Think it through. He said in 2001, Ritter was offered a deal to complete 6 months probation and then charges were dropped. But he did it again in 2009. Rather, he was caught again in 2009. And then he was, you know, never heard from again until now, when the people who are poo-pooing the idea that Russia interfered in our election are all of a sudden holding him up as what, a paragon of virtue? Seriously? I'm sorry. If you're soliciting sex with minors, I don't want to hear your name anymore. I'm certainly not going to quote you as an expert on anything except perhaps pedophilia. Got it? So there's Scott Ritter. Now, I usually agree with Ray McGovern, but what I think is the case with these former intelligence officials and others who are poo-pooing the Russia thing, I think what they're poo-pooing is Russiagate, as it were, saying that, you know, Trump wasn't guilty of working in cahoots with Russia to steal the election. I don't think they're saying that Russia didn't attempt to hack in or to influence our elections. If they are saying that, then I think they've got blinders on and they're just wrong. Sorry, I don't have complete, total trust of our intelligence communities. But when it comes to election integrity, what reason would they have to lie about something like that? Seriously, think it through. And we've been warned over and over again that they're still doing it, and yet Donald Trump wants to reward Vladimir Putin with a seat at the G7 table to make it, once again, the G8. The only thing I agree with Steve Geller on, our first guest from today's show, is that we need to get rid of Donald Trump. We disagree on how it's to be done, but totally agree that it must be done. And I don't pray, but in this instance, I pray that the powers that be in the Democratic Party do not do what they did last time, and they allow for a free and fair and open election and let the most popular candidate win, because that's how elections should work. None of this Electoral College bullshit where the guy who loses by 3 million votes is made president. How about we get back to the more vote, the person who gets the most votes wins. Interesting concept. Anyway, that does it for us for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'll see you tonight on the broadcast. And back here tomorrow, it's Thursday. Howie Klein will be along, and we'll see what else the day brings us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And I'll see you tomorrow. Keep the faith, everyone. Bye.